Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Eye on the Tigers podcast. My name is Eli Hoff, and I'm your Mizzou sports beat writer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. It is almost March, and man, oh man, do we have a lot to talk about today on quite a few fronts. Mizzou men's basketball marching onward into the most important month of the season. Got a loss in Fayetteville and a 30-point win over South Carolina to discuss. Mizzou women's basketball looking for a new coach for the first time in 15 years since before the Tigers were in the SEC. Robin Pinchton is done, as we have expected for a while now after this season. Mizzou football already getting ready for 2025. Spring practices start Friday, which might be the day that many of you are listening to this. There won't be a spring game this year. There might not be much information that comes out of spring ball, but it is happening. Like I said, a lot to get to, so let's get to it for today's show. We'll start with Mizzou men's hoops, since this is, I'd argue, the most fun thing happening in Columbia these days, other than better weather and what might be fool spring, but nonetheless feels like spring. Let's go back to the weekend to start this off. Mizzou goes down to Arkansas after the big win over Alabama last week, and the Tigers fall to the Hogs, 92-85, the final score from Fayetteville. I was down there for this one, and this is one of those at this time of year where obviously it is a disappointing result for Mizzou. Some people call it a trap game. Maybe it is, just given that Mizzou had beat Arkansas once before. I don't think a lot of MU fans at least thought too much of this Razorbacks team. They have been playing better since they were when they came to Columbia. They lost Boogie Flan, the point guard, but John Calipari went down to really an eight-man rotation, which it's been early in the year to be down to just eight guys. But they'd been getting some results. They're now looking like a team, last I checked, still on the bubble. Dennis Gates did not like it when I referred to them as a bubble team in a conversation with him last week. He was happy to argue why they're not, but that's the status. But they got a good win over Missouri. Seems like that may actually be what puts Arkansas in the tournament, but still some games to go. The takeaways from Missouri, though. A loss doesn't change what this season is for them. It could have made the race for a double bye for a top four finish in the SEC, double bye in the SEC tournament, I should say, could have made that more possible. I'll talk about that in a second here. Would have made, you know, helped in the seeding conversation going around with this Missouri team, but it's far from catastrophic. Mizzou still certainly on pace to be a very good seed in both the SEC and NCAA tournament. All the things we thought true about this team and the ways it's able to win and the reasons why it's good, all of that is still true. But I think that the takeaway is that Mizzou is a team that can withstand a lot of things because of its multiplicity, because of the number of players who can lead this team in scoring and can do the scoring, the number of styles with which the Tigers can play. But there is a limit to what this team can withstand in terms of things going wrong or flaws in any one game. And that's what I think this showed. The three things that went critically wrong for Mizzou. One was just not having Josh Gray, the traditional center, who we really, he's not the flashiest dude, right? His stat lines are not anything that you look at and you say, you know, oh wow, that's an MVP type player. Against South Carolina in the game Mizzou won, he played 20 minutes, scored 3 points, and had 5 rebounds, 2 assists, which is actually one of his more productive games, right? But he did not make the trip to Fayetteville, came down with an illness of some sort, did not travel with the team and was out there. And it really shouldn't come as a surprise that Mizzou looked markedly worse without him available, given that his position, which is to just say, you know, traditional, physical, well-sized big man, was one of the biggest transfer portal priorities after last year. This was the thing we said, oh, Mizzou needs. He really is that important, not just defensively, but some of the offensive actions they like to run through him, some of the dribble handoffs, especially to Caleb Grill. Those are a really core part of the offense that I'm sure I could find this somewhere in the stats or ask the team, but it feels like There's at least one Caleb Grill three per game. That's just him running a curl action off a Josh Gray dribble handoff. It feels like that is clockwork for this team. So anyway, no Josh Gray. That's thing number one that goes wrong, and that certainly was an impact. Arkansas just feasted down low. They had Mizzou had 28 points in the paint, whereas Arkansas had 44. It's a difference of 16 points in the paint. I think you could argue that if Josh Gray's there, that differential looks at least a little bit different. Second thing that went wrong, turnovers for Mizzou. So many turnovers, 18 in this game, which is up there. Not quite the highest of any game this season, but up there for this Mizzou team. Just uncharacteristic. That was the word that both Dennis Gates and Marquez Warrick, who we talked to after the game, that's the word they used. And it's true. This team just isn't prone to turning the ball over like that. Now this is one of those things where if you did not watch this game, if you just look at, you know, the raw stats from it, you might say, well, turnovers weren't that much of an issue, because while Mizzou had 18, Arkansas had 16, which is still pretty high. And you say, well, if you really only end up having two more turnovers than the other team, is it that much of an issue? And maybe in a general sense, no, but in this game, it was the type of turnovers and what the turnovers led to. Arkansas had 30 points off of Mizzou turnovers. Mizzou had 14 points off of Arkansas turnovers. So while the difference in actual turnovers was only two, the points scored off of them was 16. That's a significant factor in any game, right? So turnover piece is factor number three. I guess the third factor I'd say is Caleb Grill. He scored 13 points, but was 2 for 12 from 3-point range. Missed his last 10 shots of the game. And I want to be careful in this, because like Caleb Grill is entitled to an off night. He hasn't really had many of those this season. He's certainly had quite a few on nights where he is the reason Mizzou wins a given game. Going back to Eastern Washington in the non-con was the first time that it was like, oh yeah, Caleb Grill can win a game for you. He has an off night from three. Again, he still scored 13 points. He has an off night from three. It came back against South Carolina. We'll talk about that in a minute, but off night there. There was also a disparity in free throws. That is what Dennis Gates was really talking about after the game. Yeah, Arkansas shot. They went 28 for 37 at the free throw line. Mizzou was 13 for 17. Some folks weren't happy with the referees. I think Dennis Gates, even though he doesn't really want to say it this bluntly because he doesn't want to get fined, so he'll kind of talk about the whistle as this abstract thing that I guess makes him immune from fines. And fine if that's what he wants to talk about. There's always going to be a disparity on the road. That's how things work. This team can win without free throws. I think some of that wasn't contributed to by the referees being unfair. It was Mizzou just playing poorly in the post, and instead of trying to defend with verticality, just hacking at the ball, and Arkansas getting a lot of and-ones. There were a lot of things that led to the free throw disparity. So I'm leaving that out of these three for now, to mostly say the three big factors were Josh Gray's absence, the turnover issues, and Caleb Grill being cold. All of that, and Mizzou only lost by 7 points and had a chance in the final minute. They tried to pull off the trap and steal inside the final minute, got the trap and the steal, and that led to a wide open 3-point look for Caleb Grill that clanked off the front iron. 7-point margin of defeat with all of that going wrong. My takeaway is that tells you that Mizzou can probably have, if Mizzou just has one fewer thing go wrong or one fewer flaw, like we just talked about, they have a very good chance to win this game, because even with all of those flaws, they still were 100% in it. Mizzou led by, oh, what was it, 7 points? Mizzou led by 7 at half. I'd said to some of the other folks down at Bud Walton Arena, I was shocked Mizzou was up by 7, because that seemed like one of its worst first halves of SEC play. Now, there have been some really good first halves, so maybe that's not the bar. But it did not seem like Mizzou was playing very well, and it was up. Then they regressed to the mean, so to speak, in the second half. Arkansas took control, 14-point swing in the final 20 minutes. Game is what it was. We talked about it there. South Carolina comes to town on Wednesday. Mizzou is a team that one of its most impressive traits has been the way it bounces back. Add this to the evidence for that. 30-point win over the Gamecocks, 101-71. This was never in doubt. I think South Carolina scored the first bucket of the game, and then Mizzou just kept rolling, led by as much as 32. This is one where Jeremy Sanchez, walk on team captain, it's a cool story. One I'll probably end up writing. Played for Dennis Gates at Cleveland State, and for his last year is now with his former coach again at Missouri. Student section is chanting for him to check into the game. He checks in, gets the ball a little bit. Very cool at the end there. Mizzou gets to breeze past here. South Carolina is pretty bad. Like we talk about the strength of the SEC. South Carolina has sunk to the bottom. They did win a game. They beat Texas over the weekend. So there will not be a winless team in the SEC for the second, or there won't be 2 years in a row of a winless team in the SEC. Colin Murray Broyles, I think he'd count as a power forward. He was good in this game. The rest of the Gamecocks just not. Lamont Paris was coach of the year last year, and just seemed like after the game talking to him, a guy who was out of answers with how some of these teams are playing against them. Mizzou did score the most points of anybody against South Carolina this year, has now gone into triple digits in back-to-back home games, shot 64% from the field, 58% from three, and 83% from the free throw line, though only 12 free throws in this one. This was a game where South Carolina got 25 free throws, Mizzou got 12, and Mizzou still won by 30 points. So when I say the free throw disparity isn't everything, it isn't everything with this team. They can still lose that category, so to speak, and win by a lot. This doesn't really help the tournament resume. South Carolina at home is a quad three game for you. That's just the byproduct of them having lost a lot. But of course, winning by 30 is never a bad thing. Winning at, there are positives with any win. It's just this isn't one that is going to help a ton. That said, by beating the expected margin of victory, Mizzou moved up in KenPom. Tigers were top 10. I think they were number 9 right after the game that settled at number 10 once some other games came in. They've moved up in the other rankings, which brings us to the bracketology portion of the program. I'm going to dive more in depth into this next week. Maybe we'll even bring on a guest to kind of unpack all of this. As of the time of recording, this is Thursday, wrote about this for today, Mizzou looking like a 5 seed, probably the best 5 seed, but still a 5 seed right now. I wrote kind of an explanation of all of this with, there's a spreadsheet in there, some of the NCAA selection rules. There's a kind of handbook that they give the selection committee that I read through and pulled some of the interesting things from there. I encourage you to go read that, because if I just talked about that, it would get very boring and very dull, because it is sort of dense. So I encourage you to read it there. But the gist is Mizzou looks like a 5 seed, probably going to Seattle if they're there's a chance for Mizzou to get to a 4 seed. We'll talk about the ability to move up there. Assuming Mizzou's a 4 or a 5, which seems most likely right now, but isn't locked in, probably going to Seattle to play, maybe Denver, maybe Providence, Rhode Island. Got a nice little range of 3 cities. I'm not sure how often those 3 are grouped together. That's the possibility. There is a clear path, very clear path, for Mizzou to get a double bye in the SEC tournament, which would mean finishing in the top 4 in the regular season. That allows you to enter the tournament bracket straight in the quarterfinals. Obviously an advantage there. This was Mizzou as of about 20-ish hours before the recording of this episode, did not control its own destiny. Then Texas A&M lost at home to Vanderbilt. Now Mizzou does control its own destiny. 3 regular season games to go: at Vandy, at Oklahoma, and then home against Kentucky. Mizzou wins out there, it gets a top 4 seed. I'm quite sure. This is where the tiebreakers come into play. So Mizzou currently sits 5th in the SEC. Auburn seems like it's going to be number 1, as we've thought for a while. Then you've got Alabama, Florida, and Tennessee are the next tier. And they still have some games against each other. Alabama plays both Tennessee and Florida. I think I should have had that in front of me. But there are games there where somebody has to add a loss to their record. And so I think because of that, and because Mizzou is out of that fray, there are just going to be some losses added to those teams, where if Mizzou wins out, it gets in. It also helps that the Tigers have the tiebreaker on Alabama and Florida in terms of head-to-head. They do not on Tennessee, but it's Alabama and Florida, the key ones, where if Mizzou can go 3-0 between now and And next Sunday, they can, or next Saturday, I guess, is when the Kentucky game is. Tigers could be in a top four spot there. If they lose a game, then there goes control of the destiny. I'm not sure how much that is going to be told to the team going into these final three games. Dennis Gates has been explicit in saying a double bye is one of this team's goals because they want to be winning things in the postseason, and that obviously makes life easier there. But it is certainly possible. Again, win and you're in. Winning also would help this team move up in the NCAA tournament seeding. Like I said, they're considered by most bracketologists out there the best five seed in the mix. You know, some wins move you up to a four, and I think a three seed is possible. Now, a three seed is what is necessary if Mizzou wants to play in the first round NCAA tournament site that is geographically the closest to Columbia. That is Wichita, Kansas. No 4-5 matchups, or 5-12, 4-13, you get it. None of that's happening in Wichita. You got to be a two or a three seed, or drop to a six or a seven seed. But in Mizzou's case, you want to be a two or a three seed to get there. It's certainly possible. If I were a Mizzou fan, I would probably cheer for that. I'm not cheering for that because I do not want to go to Wichita, Kansas to cover a game, but I understand that many of you do. So that seems like the best case scenario for Mizzou is get to a spot where they can be a three seed and have some geographic sway, and then go to Wichita and make it an easier trip for fans than like I said, Seattle or Providence, Rhode Island. Providence would be interesting given that Mizzou football played at UMass. Could be a surprisingly helpful year if you are a New England-based Mizzou fan. Not a bad time for you, but maybe it's time to give those in the Pacific Northwest a turn at seeing their alma mater play close to home. That's the basketball breakdown again. Online at stltoday.com, you'll find a deeper walkthrough of bracketology of where that stands for Mizzou. You can skim it or read through it as much as you like, but I think folks have found that helpful. And like I said, next week we'll dig more into the bracket scenarios when that becomes a even more concrete than it is now, with a couple more regular season games gone by. On to the women's basketball program. You've probably heard the news by now, if for no other reason than I mentioned it at the start of the show. Women's basketball coach Robin Pinchton, after 15 years, will be gone as Missouri's coach after this season. She, we'll talk about this. So she is currently 249 and 216, just one win shy of 250 at Mizzou. The Tigers have two regular season games to go, and then whatever they get in the SEC tournament, it seems like that'll just be one game, but you never know. Through her Mizzou tenure, she made it to four NCAA tournaments. This year will not make it five. Those four all aligned with Sophie Cunningham's years at Mizzou. And to catch you up on how we got here, I think folks are aware, but we'll run through how it got to this point and what this decision actually looks like. Sophie Cunningham leaves after the 2018-19 season. Mizzou women bring in a decent recruiting class there, but they haven't been back to the tournament since then. Just started sort of a downward slide in results after the 2022-23 season. Desiree Reed Francois, who was the athletic director at the time, says Robin Pynchon will be back for another year, but is pretty blunt in saying it's either make the NCAA tournament again or the job goes away. Robin Pynchon did not make the NCAA tournament in 23-24, but by the time that became evident, it was Reed Francois who was gone. And so this, I know we talked about this on the show, and I wrote about it, and we've talked about it in the reader chats. You can be part of it, stltoday.com. This is not groundbreaking, but Mizzou chose to keep Robin Pynchon, I should say, going into the final year of her contract, instead of paying a buyout that would have just been a few hundred thousand dollars and have the interim make the hire. Again, we talked about it at the time of you know, what the pros and cons were. The pro of keeping her around at that point was saving money on this and not having an interim AD make the hire, because it was still at this time that Mizzou was searching for an AD. Desiree Reed Francois had left by this point last year, but Laird Veach didn't start on the job until early May. So this was one of the byproducts of the timing of the AD change last year. And we knew that at the time. So going into the season, everyone really knew where this was going. Pynchon had not had her contract extended. It was due to expire on April 30th of this year. Talking to the players at the start of the season, you know, they were aware. Everybody was aware of what this was. Maybe if there'd been a dramatic turnaround or this team had made the NCAA tournament, an extension would have been offered. To my knowledge, there was never any discussion or really any doubt over that Mizzou would let Pynchon's contract expire. Now, what I think has thrown some folks for a loop, and I've been some of the folks who have written about this are going for this. Mizzou is framing this. They announced this yesterday. They announced this on Wednesday as Pynchon stepping down, and that is about 20% true. And I mean this with all due respect to Coach Pynchon. She's been very, very kind when I've covered her. But this was not her decision to leave the University of Missouri. That was set in stone by the fact that her contract was up April 30th, and there has not been a new contract signed. Her job was going to go away April 30th. What she decided was to step away at the end of the season, whenever that is, but probably about next week, instead of April 30th. So 6 or 7 or however many, you know, calendar weeks that is early, she's leaving. That's the part that was her choice, that she went to Laird Veach and they talked and came to the conclusion that was the way to go about this. Pynchon steps down at the end of the season. What that does, it allows Mizzou to get on with the hiring process a little bit more quickly. The search, Laird Veach said in his statement that search begins immediately. Talking to folks there, you know, he's had time to think about this, right? Because this hasn't been a surprise. This is his first coaching hire, so it will be interesting to see the direction there. That doesn't necessarily mean the hire is going to, you know, come next week, that it'll be Pynchon's last game and the next morning, hey, here's who the new coach is. Simply because Mizzou might be waiting for another team to finish play in the NCAA tournament, which would obviously indicate they're maybe the coach is coming from an NCAA tournament team. It sounds like the time frame has not been solidified there, because it might be dependent on the other coach's current spot. I put together a hot board with a few names. We'll talk about a couple in a second here. That time frame also allows Robin Pynchon to be looking for another job or another opportunity. You know, she very well might want to stay in coaching. Seems like that might be the case, in which case, you know, as soon as the season's done, everybody can go their separate ways, and it's frankly probably best for both parties. But again, to say that this was her decision to leave the university, I think is inaccurate when her contract was expiring there. So that is what went down there. Hopefully that clears up the confusion. I'd gotten a couple emails from readers this morning, and again, just seeing this muddied elsewhere. That's what led to this moment for Mizzou women's basketball. As for what's next, it's difficult to know what the hiring direction is going to be for Laird Veach, simply because a lot of it is contingent on what the level of investment is going to be in Missouri women's basketball. The SEC, like with, I think, every sport, frankly, at this point, is up there with the best conferences in the nation as far as women's basketball talent. Certainly when you look at the LSUs and the South Carolinas and the Tennessees, you know, historically, right, there's some very good women's basketball teams. Missouri has not been that or been in that mix or frankly been close recently. And so that does make you wonder, you know, what type of coach is going to be coming in here, what type of coach would look at this job and accept it. Revenue sharing starts to fall. There's a lot from a kind of financial dollars and cents and interest, not financial interest, but athletic department and administrative interest in the sport that I think is an open question at this point. Hopefully going to be able to talk to Laird Veach soon about that and share kind of his thinking around the future of this program with you all. The name that many of you seem to want based on social media commentary and comments on articles is Molly Miller at Grand Canyon. I assume it is because she has won a whole lot with the Lopes and she is from Springfield. So that seems to be the fan favorite. Kelly Harper is an interesting name who, again, I've seen some folks asking for. She played at Tennessee under Pat Summitt, then came back to coach her alma mater. But she was fired from Rocky Top last year. Lady Vols had made the NCAA tournament several times with Harper in charge, but apparently not winning enough there. She is not a coach in this cycle. She and her husband both were coaches at assistant coaches, I think, not head coach, but at Missouri State in the past. So she's got some familiarity with the state. And then, like I said, out of a job right now. It would be interesting if she is the hire. The last time Laird Veach hired a women's basketball coach was when he was the AD at Memphis, and he hired a former Tennessee women's basketball player for that job. So maybe something there. I wrote about these two and another candidate, Charmin Smith out at Cal, who I think has a really interesting background. Put those up as three potential candidates on the hot board on stltoday.com. You can read more about their backgrounds, accomplishments, all that there. I won't bog down the podcast with that. And again, there's the investment point about all of this, of just what the future of this program is going to be. It's a really interesting moment, given that the last time Mizzou was hiring a women's basketball coach, it was Mike Alden, who was the AD, and that was back before they were in the SEC. That's how long ago this was. And now, you know, revenue sharing is going to be a thing this fall and a factor in the investment. So all of that will potentially have some logic to share with you from athletic department folks next week. Otherwise, it will be evident ultimately in the hire and what whoever that ends up being is kind of saying and what the portal looks like. All that stuff will come together and we'll have you covered there. Third sport of the day to talk about here, because it's crossover season and there's a lot going on. Missouri football starting spring practice. They've got, I should have the number in front of me, 13, I think, practices between Friday is the first one. March 20th is the last one. Media, we'll get to see a few of them, mostly because, like, I will be on the road for basketball here and not staying grounded for spring football. I'll be honest, I don't expect us to learn all that much from these spring practices. I expect some of it to be intentionally boring, at least in how it's presented externally. I want to be clear, in case anybody from the athletics department, from the football program, is listening. That doesn't mean I don't want to go and watch it. I appreciate all the access we get and value every little bit of it. We enjoy actually getting to see things. But the nature of spring, it's individual emphasis for Mizzou, not on anything schematic or tactical. It's all about individual development. And there are some things I think will be downplayed intentionally, because it's sort of meant to be boring. That's at least the way Mizzou views it. But that gets underway this weekend. We'll, of course, give you the updates and the takeaways as we can. But right off the bat, one of the news items from spring ball: no spring game this year, or next year for that matter. Spring game going away in 2025 and 2026 at a minimum. I say at a minimum, that's my addition to the news, not the programs. They're citing stadium construction as the reason that the spring game will not happen. Work, as those of you who live in Columbia or come through Columbia may have seen, work is underway, I should say, on Memorial Stadium's North Concourse. They're digging out the grass hill there. It's pretty, I happen to drive by it a lot because I'm going to a lot of events over there. And every day you've just been able to see a little bit more and more of the field from stadium as you're kind of driving by there. I try not to look too much because I feel like I'm going to get in a wreck or hit the guardrail there. But now it's to a point where they've dug out enough of the hill that from the road you can pretty much see the entire field in there. So it seems like they got to dig that out before they can start building what they need to build under there. But work is going. And essentially, if they were to do the spring game in March and allow fans into the stadium, work would have to be paused. And it's not just taking a day off. It's you know, there's plumbing and electrical things for equipment that has been rerouted, and some things turned on and some things turned off. There's a lot of frankly setbacks that would have to be incurred for them to do a spring game. They're not really seeing that as worth it. You know, some folks are probably disappointed by that. I understand the logic of it. With you know, it's not a knock on Mizzou fans that spring games are not particularly well intended. You don't know what the weather's going to be. You know, last year it was outside and a fairly decent day, quite windy if I remember correctly. But the year before it was in the indoor facility. You know, you don't know what any given Saturday in March is going to give you from a weather standpoint in Missouri. And then there's the matter too of spring games are falling out of fashion around the country. Last year's wasn't really a game. Like there was some scorekeeping, but it was they called it thud tempo, which I understand why they do this, but it was essentially two hand touch, but you're putting your shoulder into the guy, not tackling anybody to the ground. Linemen aren't going 100% at each other because nobody wants to risk anyone getting hurt over a spring exhibition. So you've seen some fan or some programs do kind of fan days where it's the NFL Pro Bowl type events and autographs and get pictures with kids, all that stuff. That's cool. Mizzou not opting to do anything like that here this year or next year because of the stadium construction point and what they'd have to pause with that. Some other schools and other coaches, Matt Rule at Nebraska, I think, has said this. I'm sure there have been others, but he's who comes to mind, have said they're not doing spring games because they're worried about tampering and the portal and all this stuff. I was told pretty bluntly, this isn't that for Missouri. Some people then haven't believed that. I don't know. That's up to all of you. That's what I was told. But I will say I'm not sure spring game comes back in 2027, simply because these are already falling away pretty quickly in 2025. 2 years from now, who's gonna want to say, oh, we're bringing the spring game back? Maybe spring practice is gone and it's June OTAs like the NFL. I know that's been something that's been talked about nationally as something here. Who knows what the portal window is gonna look like? Who knows what the playoffs like? Who knows what this is gonna look like in 2027? But no spring game the next 2 years. So cross that one off your 2025 and 2026 calendars. I want to close the show here with something to build a little excitement about spring football, because it is going to be fun to have this back and me looking ahead to 2025, even though we are pretty much exactly, I guess I shouldn't say exactly, a couple of days away from being exactly 6 months from the start of the regular season in August. It is late February, but we are looking ahead to this stuff. I'm going to go through the top five returning players who I think are in for the most important spring camps as just kind of building into their off seasons. Then I'll go through the top five incoming transfers who I'm the most excited to see suit up and why that is. This I think is a fun little way to build up to camp. So as far as the returners go, I got five names down here, five players who are returning from last year. And these are guys who I'm excited to see, not necessarily in spring ball, because it hasn't even been 2 months since the 2024 season ended with the Music City Bowl. So it's not like I'm expecting any of these players to have undergone radical transformations or big developmental leaps or anything like that. But they're guys who this is the foundation for them to do that this summer, because there's a lot of opportunity for them as far as the roster and the depth chart goes and who's leaving and who's come in and all that stuff. These are guys who, when I'm talking about this team at August and writing with them in August, might look back and say, well, that really started in February and March and the work there. Number one on the list, I'm gonna go one through five here. Number one on the list for me is wide receiver Marquise Johnson. He had such an intriguing freshman year. The speed popped immediately, had some of those big catches, big touchdowns. And then year two didn't pop as much. We'd been wondering, frankly, if we'd done this list at this time last year, he would have been on it because the potential was so strong. It didn't really seem like the route tree expanded all that much. The usage wasn't there. It just wasn't clicking. He had some really nice special teams plays, but that's not, you're not here for my thoughts on who's going to be the best punt team gunners. Then the Music City Bowl came around, and he had a really positive showing there when Mizzou had a wide receiving core that looked a little bit more like what it will have this year, which is to say, no Luther Burden, no Mookie Cooper, no, I guess Mekhi Miller too. We'll talk about Kevin Coleman here. Spoiler: he's on my top five for incoming transfers. But there's just so much opportunity in this wide receiver room going forward that Marquise Johnson is in line for a lot of targets. So it will be interesting to see what this looks like for him. He doesn't necessarily need to be the top target or the top wide receiver, but there's undeniably opportunity if he can add a little bit more to it. So seeing how he attacks that, I think will be exciting. Number two on this list for me, going into the trenches for offensive lineman Logan Reichert. Now's the time for him, just pure and simple. He was a highly rated lineman coming into this team, but as is the case, even with highly rated offensive linemen, that's just very rarely a position where you're going to play as a true freshman. Redshirted, needed some time. This past year, his second season, his redshirt freshman year, wasn't ready, and Mizzou went for experience ahead of him. But Mizzou's replacing three spots on the offensive line: left tackle, right guard, right tackle. And depending where Caden Green slots in, this is one of the things to watch for. You know, maybe Caden Green, the left guard, bumps out to left tackle, right? We'll see how that kind of shakes out. There's at least one guard spot to some degree up for grabs, which is where Reichert projects to be. He got some work as the starting right guard during last spring, and then Mizzou rearranged the line, and that was that. It will be interesting to see if that's the case. If he is going to be the type of lineman that it seemed he could be coming out of high school, then now is the time where he needs to be able to take command of that spot and be starting on this offensive line in the fall. We'll see if that happens, but I think this will be a big and telling spring for him in his development. Number three, I don't know what his participation is going to look like in the spring. I'd be sort of surprised if he's out there, but Darius Smith, Georgia edge rusher, who went down with a season-ending knee injury right before the season started. Man, it'd be fun to see him out there again. But again, I don't know what that's going to look like, but I want him in the mix here now because it could be a really big year for him. And he is technically a returning player, even though he has yet to play in a game for Missouri. Number four, going back to the wide receiver group, Joshua Manning is in the same class as Marquise Johnson. Kind of a similar situation. Manning had a really strong spring, really strong fall camp, especially last year, and wound up starting some games as the third wide receiver when Mookie Cooper was out for a while, but he wasn't going to be a featured guy in last year's offense. But he's got a little bit bigger frame and got some physicality, so that I think he can play the Theo East role a little bit in terms of that. He can make some of the contested catches, but it's one of those situations where we haven't seen a whole lot to really know what he can be. Again, just because he had a good offseason last year, I think something similar could be in the works this year. The opportunity is there for him to have a much bigger role than he has in the past, spring being the foundation there. Number five for me is, and this is where I there were a couple different ways I could have gone with this one. But where I settled on was tight end Brett Norfleet. He's had two really intriguing seasons, in terms of especially what he can do when the ball's in his hands. That he's a very athletic guy when he gets downhill. He's you know, gone for hurdles, he'll lower his shoulder, all that. It's just been health in his shoulder and that he underwent, you know, he's had work done on the shoulder to get healthy, all of that. Depending what his spring looks like participation wise, it could be very nice to see him get going again. College football always likes to have, you know, a dominant tight end or two who everybody kind of gets behind, right? It was Brock Bowers at Georgia a couple of years ago, Tyler Warren at Penn State. I'm not saying Brett Norfleet is that. You know, maybe he could be, but I'm not advocating for that. But, you know, I almost wonder if he could be in 2026, right? That it would be nice to see him just get a full build up to a season to be healthy and 100% going in. There's so much that is turning over. Really, this entire offense is turning over in a lot of ways as far as starters are concerned. Norfleet is one of the rare spots of continuity on this offense. Maybe that's something that Kirby Moore in his third year calling plays wants to accentuate. I think there's so much opportunity for how this team can use Brett Norfleet in the offense. He just has to be healthy and on the field and continue rising to that level, frankly. So I he's someone who excited to see what 2025 entails for him. Now, this is I think the really fun part. Looking through this transfer portal class, so many good players coming, and obviously a very highly rated transfer portal class. And I'd said going into it, I've made the argument this is and was Eli Drinkwitz's most important transfer portal cycle since taking the job at Mizzou. Just really pivotal. And as far as the rankings or ratings are concerned, it seems like he knocked it out of the park, but of course that remains to be seen on the field. But I went through the list here and cut it down to the five transfers I'm most excited to see in the spring as far as just getting a chance to you know, having looked at their stats and the game logs and the you know, bios at their other schools and you know, watching some highlights for them, but to actually see them against their new teammates stacking up. I don't expect it to come away with a whole ton in the spring, but excited to see these guys going to a countdown 5-1 here to try to save a little bit of suspense about the player who surely none of you will guess is number one on this list. But number five of the transfers I am most incoming transfers I am most excited to see this spring, Kevin Coleman Jr., wide receiver who is transferring in from Mississippi State. He previously was at Jackson State, was at Louisville before Mississippi State. He, for those of you in the St. Louis area, played at St. Mary's and was a star in the metro area. He comes in as the new slot receiver wearing number three for Mizzou. Eli Drinkwitz made the joke in the past that because Mizzou was losing a really good slot receiver wearing number three, they went in the portal and said, who's the best slot receiver who wears that jersey number out there? And Kevin Coleman popped up. But he's going into, you know, he's a veteran guy who has SEC experience, has continued moving up levels as far as his college career has gone. And as we said for the returners, I'm going to keep saying it again and again, so much opportunity for the wideouts this year to carve out roles and find ways to contribute. All of that is very much on the table. We talked about what Luther Burden's usage was and Mizzou's ability to get him the ball. You know, Kevin Coleman, not necessarily going to be Luther Burden, but he can give you a lot out of that position. It will be interesting to just, I don't expect we're going to see a schematic indication of how Mizzou wants to use him. That's antithetical to how this program approaches the spring, but his intensity, his demeanor and all of that, excited to see how that factors in, given that where things stand right now, you know, you'd probably assume he's going to be the top wide receiver in the fall. Number four is a name who, I'll say it here. I think this guy has gone vastly underrated in transfer portal discussion, and I think could be the player on this list or just on the list of incoming transfers who makes the biggest impact for this team besides number one on this list, and he is the obvious exception. Jalen Catalan, safety who's coming over from UNLV, where he was playing under former Mizzou coach Barry Odom. He's a guy who has been around for a while. I think this is going to be year seven of college football for him. He, you know, had a redshirt and a couple medical waivers in the COVID year. You know, how he's in this sort of last wave of the quote unquote very old guys playing college football. But he's had some injuries there. He has SEC experience. He was an All SEC defensive back when he started out. He started out at Arkansas. And actually played a good game against Missouri back in the day, so to speak. Then went down to Texas, had some injuries there, and since wound up at UNLV, sort of looking to revitalize his career, and did so, stayed healthy last season, and was an All Mountain West safety. Now, of course, this is the SEC, not the Mountain West, but the fact that he was already playing at an All League level as an underclassman. It just makes me really intrigued for what this guy can be as a senior. I think he's someone who can really fly around, can make plays on the ball, all of the things that you want to see out of a safety spot, given what Mizzou secondary looked like last year and the flaws it showed at times. You know, I'm not saying it's the reason Mizzou missed the college football playoff or you know, lost to South Carolina or got blown out by Alabama and Texas A&M. There are other things that went into that, but the secondary is certainly a spot where you can envision Mizzou wanting to make some gains. Mizzou brought in quite a few players at the defensive back positions, both corner and safety, from the transfer portal. But I am really intrigued by what Catalan specifically can bring there. Like I said, I think he could wind up being the most underrated guy here, or at least underrated in terms of his potential impact for this team. One guy who has not been underrated, or certainly seems to, and he's gotten a lot of hype, I should phrase it that way. Maybe he is underrated. Damon Wilson, the second defensive end coming in from Georgia. That makes two defensive ends coming over from the Bulldogs in the last 2 years, driving over at a respectable speed, I'm sure. He chose Mizzou over Ohio State. Those were the final two schools there. He wound up picking the Tigers. He was the, at the time, one of, if not the best player available in the portal. He was made his decision a little bit later on in the cycle, but he was considered the best defensive end to have transferred at any point in the cycle, and Mizzou secured his services. Mizzou has benefited from having some strong kind of alpha edge rushers in recent years. That's as most teams, you know, like to have. That's helpful. But Darius Robinson left, was a first round pick a couple years ago. Johnny Walker, after last year, had a good season. He seems headed to the NFL, though not to the combine, but headed to the NFL. Now, there are other players who will be in the mix here, but Damon Wilson vaults right to the top of that. This is someone who some of these defensive ends, you can even in these individual drills, you can see it pop for them with just the way they exact violence on tackling dummies and some of the machinery that they have for these guys. His athleticism, there's all these things with edge rushers that you can pick up from individual workouts. So he's someone who I predict over the next few weeks, you'll see, a video or two out there on Twitter and think, oh yeah, this guy's going to be something. So excited to see what Mr. Wilson brings to the table. Number two, this is the incoming player who I am the most excited to talk to. So he makes the list here, but I think he's also going to be really fun on the field. Running back Ahmad Hardy coming over from Louisiana Monroe, ULM. He is going into his second season of college football. But as a freshman with I think they're the Warhawks down there, something hawk and military related, I think. But down at ULM, ran for 1,351 yards as a true freshman. Now, not the SEC, not trying to equivocate that. But that's a heck of a freshman season from a production standpoint to just come into college football and do that right away. You give him another year, you move him up a level. Mizzou would obviously be happy if he runs for 1,300, but even if that's only 900 or 1,000, that's still really good. Tailback position where Nate Newell and Marcus Carroll have left the program. They're done college football. They are out of eligibility. Jamal Roberts is back, but this is another position. I've said it too many times on the show. Wide open as far as opportunity is concerned. Would not shock me if Ahmad Hardy comes in and takes hold of that position group and is the running back, not just of 2025, but potentially 2026 or even there we go that far, 2027 for this team. You can see him being around for a little bit because he is so young. Quite the personality. I've heard a couple interviews he's done. He is a big fan of riding horses. Posted a video the other day of him riding a horse. Part of me, this would never happen, but I sure hope when I get to the team facility on Saturday for the first workout, the media get to see that it's going to be, you got the usual mix of cars and some sports cars and Mustangs and stuff in the lot, and then just like tied to a lamppost with a basket of hay as a horse. That'd be good. Take your horse to practice day. But he's someone who I think fans are just gonna love hearing from. So I'm excited to talk to him. Excited to see him and kind of dig into. To what Curtis Looper, the running backs coach, he's someone who's gives some really good insight into players. I think this is going to be fun to see how Ahmad Hardy fits into this. Number one, I'll spare you the drum roll, but you can take your guess. You're going to be right anyway on who the number one transfer I'm most excited to see in spring ball is. No shocker, it's Bo Prabila, the incoming transfer quarterback from Penn State. There's so much to go into this. I will try to keep it light here because again, we could do a whole hour on just the quarterback room and the quarterback situation. My hunch going into this weekend is that Eli Drinkwitz will brand this as an open quarterback competition between Prabula, between Drew Pine coming back, between Sam Horan, who's expected to be participating in football practices, stepping away from baseball to do this. Seems like the Tommy John recovery should be at a point where maybe not that the quarterback's really getting tackled anyway in spring, but I'd expect him to be a significant, if not full, participant in spring practice. Got Matt Zollers, the incoming freshman. We might talk freshman on another springtime show here, but he's going to be in the mix, right? There's a lot of guys in the quarterback room. I expect that it'll be branded as a competition, but I it would be incorrect of me to say anything else than Prabula has pole position in that race. Whether or not it's a true competition, right? All right, we'll talk about that. But he comes in with a lot of hype there, but also a lot of unknowns. He was sort of a specialty package quarterback with the Nittany Lions. A lot of running, not a lot of throwing. And so what his arm looks like is an open question here. This is the one where I know how this is going to go. There's going to be videos of him throwing and Drew Pine throwing and Sam Horn throwing next to each other, and folks are going to dissect those in the format, and that's cool. That's what spring ball is about, I'm sure. Eli Drinkwitz might try to minimize how much we see of that. You know, we're not going to know coming out of spring ball what this guy can do. We're not really going to know until like October of next year what he's going to be. Because of the way this works out, you know, watching him throw into a net or throw to a running back 10 yards away, or even if he is throwing, they'll do some kind of, you know, two wide receivers, two DBs type drills. Maybe we'll get to see. Regardless of what any of that looks like, we're not going to know until it's in a game with him. So as much as I am excited to see him, I know all of you are excited to see what he looks like, see how this goes, you know, write about that, document that. We do need to pump the brakes a little bit there, because we're just not going to see the juicy stuff that really has an impact now. That won't come for another 6 or 7 months. So start your countdowns now. Plenty of coverage of all of this at STLtoday.com this weekend. Men's basketball, women's basketball, spring football. Always a lot going on. Very few dull moments over here in Columbia, Missouri. That's today's show. Thanks for taking the time to listen. Always appreciate those of you who tune in wherever you find us. We appreciate also if you leave a review, like, subscribe, rate, review, all those things you can do to support us. Of course, extra support, those of you, or extra thank you for those of you who support my work and the Post-Dispatch by subscribing. You can do so at stltoday.com. If you're a new subscriber, plenty of good deals that'll get you covered through this basketball tournament run that could be a lot of fun through spring football. There's transfer portal windows in both basketball and football coming up sooner than any of us in the industry would like. All that, of course, available to those of you who are subscribers. Thank you again for taking the time to listen to the Eye on the Tigers podcast. Have a great rest of your day.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.